This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, criticism mounts against Supreme Court nominee John Roberts, and a library lets you borrow people. From our New York bureau, Robert George, he's an assistant editorial writer with the New York Post. Callie Crossley, a social cultural commentator on the television show Beat the Press, which is seen in Boston. She joins us today from VoiceWorks Studios in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service, joins us from Maryland. All right, folks, want to talk about something that is mounting in terms of the numbers, but one has to question whether or not it's going to make any dent in the direction and decision of whether or not we see John Roberts ascend to the Supreme Court. And it was based on an article that was written by Donna Brazil, a regular on this program. Of course, many know her as a political guru, as a special commentary to BlackAmericaWeb.com, which was posted this week. And she talked about whether or not people are really scrutinizing John Roberts' history on civil rights, equal opportunity, etc., enough, and whether or not we are going to see the rabid fight that one might expect from the civil rights community. George Curry?
Well, I think his record is being scrutinized. If you look at the information coming from People for America Away and Alliance for Justice, Leadership Conference on Civil Rights, they're sending out material almost every day, and his record is becoming extremely clear. But I think that notwithstanding, he's likely to get confirmed because he's been rated highly rated by the American Bar Association. He has clear credentials, certainly as a conservative, and his argument is, when I was working for the Reagan administration, I was doing as I was supposed to do. That was my job, and I would act differently if I were a Supreme Court judge. I don't think many people are buying that, but that's his argument, and that's why I think he will be confirmed.
We should note just some of the things that have come out, Robert, real quick, recently about Judge Roberts in terms of articles that have been written most recently in the New York Times and the Washington Post. It talks about how Roberts wrote memos criticizing the Voting Rights Act of 1965 and Congress's efforts to write new provisions for that act. He wrote specifically that he believed that they were trying to, quote, create a quota system for electoral politics. Now, we should note that this was written back in the 1980s, as George noted, when he was with the Reagan administration.
That's it. No, that's exactly right. And strangely enough, I agree almost 100% with George Curry, which just goes to prove that weird things happen. He is going to be confirmed, partly because. He's got the ABA backing on him. The White House is very, very smart. The way they rolled about, they noted that he had about 150 members of the DC bar, Democrat and Republican, supporting him when he was nominated to the appeals court level. And I think also, when you also have had some of the other cases that he's worked on while he's been in private practice, in terms of like supporting a gay rights brief in Denver and so forth, I think it gives a more nuanced view of the type of cases and the way he approaches some cases involving mm-hmm. civil rights and civil liberties.
Callie Crossley, perhaps I'm just used to the good old days of the Bork fight, when you see people standing up and truly hollering loudly if they heard, as is the case in a 1981 writing from Judge Roberts in talking about affirmative action, and this is a quote, "The recruiting of inadequately prepared candidates has failed miserably." When you see that kind of language, I guess I am surprised, frankly, at the quiet fire, if George Curry will allow that terminology.
Well, I think the quiet fire is going to be a little louder, closer to time. But I would add something else. I mean, I agree with both of the other people that he's going to be confirmed. But I think there will be the kind of discussion that will probably turn a little bit nasty closer to time. However, don't put aside how much personality drives this as well.
Absolutely.
If I hear one more time that the guy is a nice guy, I mean, that's the message that's been put out there. And I think that serves to sort of cow people who might be a little bit more fierce in their criticism about his record. I'm sorry to say that, but personality seems to be trumping a record at this moment. I do think you'll hear some other kinds of conversation about it, but I think there's going to be a lot of heat. I'm not sure how much light.
And I think you're right there, because I mean, if you remember, even before the Anita Hill stuff came out involving in the Clarence Thomas nomination, a lot of the fire and the ideological battle on that nomination was the fact that. In the Reagan administration, he had been a very vocal, aggressive, in-your-face individual against the civil rights establishment. So there was a personal edge to it. Whereas John Roberts has, in a sense, has flown under the radar through most of his professional career.
Well, I think also, what's important is that conservatives learned a long time ago that they don't want a Bull Connor or George Wallace image of them, because they know that would hurt them. So they've learned to be, as you pointed out earlier, Callie and Robert, that they're more affable, friendly. We don't have horns going out. We'll go visit all the senators. I'm going to smile. That is part of the packaging process, but doesn't change what is inside the package.
And George, you should also keep in mind too that he also did it. He also had it. Took a pro bono case in Washington D.C. actually on the side of welfare recipients in the District of Columbia too. So I mean, it's not pardon the expression, a pure black and white issue in terms of him being a hardcore conservative.
Well, no, I think he's black and white in terms of him being a conservative. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And these little couple of cases are really various to the bulk of his record to misidentify affirmative action the way he has, and to talk the way he has about the Voters' Rights Act. That's much more important to me than these sideshows.
Whether or not we all agree that he's going to be confirmed, I think it's important that the senators who will be voting on him are really have to look at the record and all of the record, as Donna has said in her commentary. And in that way, then they can be asked by their constituents, okay, here are the facts. Now, if you're going to tell me you're going to support a guy who was, in whatever his role was, writing up words that would oppose the Voting Rights Act, I mean, what are we talking about here? I think that the context has to be clear for those who are about to do a vote.
So do we believe that the Senate confirmation hearings that are about a month away, that are coming up, are really just an idea of show and a rubber stamp is going to be given? Or are we going to see the idea that we're really talking back and forth to a person, we're deciding whether or not truly to confirm?
I think you're still going to have some tough questioning coming from the Democratic side. I mean, my senator in New York, Chuck Schumer, is an aggressive individual, and I think he's already made a point to say that he wants to get a better view of what Roberts's philosophy is. That's not saying that the votes aren't going to be there for his eventual confirmation, but I do think.
How much do you believe that these senators are standing in the middle? Tough questioning is one thing, but the ultimate decision of casting a vote, one can give a tough question or tough questioning, but already made up in their minds that, I know this guy's going to win, so...
Well, I think one of the things that a number of people are going to be looking at it, and again speaking about the other senator in New York, is where Hillary Clinton is going to be falling in on this, because everybody knows that she's got some national ambitions of her own, and the question is going to be is she going to be listening to a significant base in her party, which of course are African Americans, and they may have a different view on John Roberts than some others do, and is Hillary Clinton going to feel that she needs to somehow triangulate herself and vote for Roberts to make herself palatable to red state America?
Yeah.
A lot of people are going to be looking at that.
All right, let me move on before we get to triangulation, which is dangerous to even talk about. All right, here's an interesting study that happened last year. University researchers conducted an experiment in which police fired 700 blank rounds in a New Orleans neighborhood in a single afternoon. No one called to report the gunfire. Now the question is raised in many urban areas as to whether or not people are too frightened to reach out, either of the police, quite frankly, or of perpetrators, to report crime in oft-times crime-ridden areas. George Curry, you've covered urban America for a long time. This is nothing new, the idea of, A, not wanting to snitch, and two, and I think of the family in Baltimore who, in fact, stood up and were firebombed and ultimately ended in the murder of a number of people in that family. Snitching can be dangerous.
When I was a reporter for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the police chief told me that he had covered one, going to investigate one murder, and there were about 300 people in the room, and everybody said it was in the bathroom at the time of the shooting. That's our reluctance. That's a reluctance there. There's a fear of intimidation, and you certainly see that with the police dramas, too. And I think that plays a role in this as well, when you see witnesses, and if things are so bad, I mean, you see them portrayed as being endangered. And New Orleans is so bad that they even have a local witness protection program. So I think New Orleans is an anomaly in a lot of ways. I mean, you've seen the murder rate go down in 46 of the 50 top cities, but New Orleans, which a decade ago led the nation, it's been down, but it's back up. Not to the same proportion. So New Orleans does present a very different, baffling case. But whether it's New Orleans or anywhere else, this is a continuing problem, a problem we've had all along.
Callie, let me ask you this. I worked for years, or years ago, I should say, in the victim's witness unit in a prosecutor's office in Michigan. And one of the things that you would see is this reluctance of people to come forward. Oftentimes, these are the same people that are being preyed upon day after day after day. It is a catch-22. In order to correct it, one has to believe that you will at least initially step out and make a phone call.
Well, I think what happens is, I don't know what happened in Michigan, but I would dare say, not having been there, that there were some instances where people could see that coming forward made some positive difference. You got to have the benefits outweighing the risks. And if I am living in the neighborhood and I know the gang guy down the street knows that I'm talking to somebody, and I know that I don't have necessarily what I believe to be the strong backing of the police, why would I say anything? Of course I'm not going to say anything. I mean, people have to be able to see that stepping forward meant some direct change to their community and meant also that they could be protected in some way. And, you know, you can't blame people for wanting to make certain that they save themselves from being shot at or worse.
I think Callie touched upon something that's very important here. There is it's a three part. I don't want to sound like I'm going to be triangulating again, but there's a three part element here.
Sound like that, yes.
Yeah, there are the citizens. There are the thugs and the criminals here, and then there are the police. If the citizens don't also have a trust or a good relationship with the police, they're also going to be reticent to step forward as well. I mean, I think in cities where you've got good community policing and you've got a good relationship where somebody in that community knows that they can go down to the local police station, say such and such is going on, and that they know that there's going to be a response and that they're going to be protected, you'll have more and more cooperation.
But George, isn't that Pollyanna to think that you have that kind of down to the local police station and you'll be safe if you tell, you know, the desk captain there to send a unit by your house? I have many friends and family in law enforcement, and they talk about how stretched they are. The fact that you know known drug areas, but you can't just keep cars there. You can't just keep presence there.
Yeah, the perception is Officer Friendly does not patrol our neighborhood. So I don't see the relationship as being the same, although I do agree that team policing has helped a lot. I think the bigger problem here in New Orleans, particularly when you talk about murder, is that of the people arrested for murder, only one in four is convicted. And the problem is that the prosecutors don't even take most of them to trial. So why would you go out and put yourself at risk when the prosecuting part of this, which is a major part of this, won't even go to court? So people are not going to go to court and go to police and increase in numbers with that kind of a record.
All right. Let me quickly turn to a story that's coming out of Sweden. And it's a very interesting concept. You can go to the library there and actually borrow a real live human being. It's called the Living Library Project, and it allows you to come face-to-face with, let's say you were interested in what a lesbian thinks, or even a racist, and you would actually be able to sit and converse with that person. The hope is that if people come face-to-face, they can start to understand each other better, and eventually, the thought is, eliminate some of the prejudices we all hold.
This is why some Americans have a dubious view of just about anything that comes out of Europe. This has got to be one of the silliest things I've ever heard. And I'll say this. I mean, you know, if you go out and say you want to borrow, say a black man, are you going to be getting George Curry? Are you going to be getting Robert George? Are you going to be getting Terrell Owens? You know, I mean, you cannot get an image of what a specific group is, you know, mm-hmm. just from one particular person. I mean, I think it's very naive, and God knows what the late fees are going to be if you don't return the person in time.
Callie.
I read it and I said to myself, what? This is just, you know, slavery reincarnate. And then I thought to myself, if you're African American and been around for a while and had to traverse other worlds, you spend 3/4 of your life educating. So then you mm-hmm. figure, well,
Absolutely. Okay,
you know, I've been spending my time educating. Well, maybe I should do it in a formal program if this is the way this is going to work. I think the concept, I mean, what's underneath the concept is an interesting one, but I think there are ways to set up some dialogue across sectors, which is what I think they're trying to get to, that would allow people to have the discussions. And Robert is absolutely right. When I started thinking about the spectrum of folks that could be checked out, it did make one raise an eyebrow. So that's
George.
My feeling about it is it's a good intent, but, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Oh, my callous journalists, I mean, look, they're trying to do something different. And they know that, Robert, that certainly you're going to find variation in each group. But the idea, if you want to spend some time with a homosexual or Muslim or gypsy even, that there are people who are volunteering to do that. And I don't see where that hurts anything. I don't think it's going to make a monumental difference. But I say, oh, let's try something different. Let's go for it.
I know this sounds like...
Your journalists are so callous.
This sounds like Paul Mooney rent a Negro.
It does, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Let me
Except
pull
he
it back.
Say and... he would not say Negro.
All right. Well, let me pull it back because Callie is already paving us going to HE double toothpicks. So we'll just stop it here while we're ahead. Robert George, Callie Crossey, George Curry. Thanks so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Thanks. Bye.